Accession number 12824, Mr. G. Forster, Reel 3.
Mr. Forster, Reel 3. Now, you were posted to the 16th Battalion, DLI, from Bransworth. You're now a fully fledged.
The Royal Light Infantry.
Although you had a reconnaissance corps number.
Yeah.
But and they were in Rye, I think you said.
The headquarters were in Rye, but we our billets were billeted in houses at Winchelsea, up the hill, right on the very top.
Now, you went to join, you went up there. Did you go with a draft?
To Durham, to Bransworth. From Bransworth to, yes, there was, I should imagine, about 25 of us.
And what was your reception when you got to join the 16th? How did this, did they put you all in the same company? Or did
No. They split us up. I think about four of us, or three of us, went to C Company, some went to D Company, some went to A Company, some went to HQ.
And how did they receive you into the regiment?
Oh, quite all right.
Who would actually speak to you and tell you what was what and which company and platoon you were in?
We had to report to Rye first, to the headquarters, and they designated us to where we had to be, and they transported us to the different companies. We had to report to the company office at Winchelsea.
And who was the company commander at that time? Do you remember?
The company commander. No, I can't remember his name. And our platoon commander was Lieutenant Duck, in charge of...
Duck?
Duck, D-U-C-K. I think it's Duck. He was killed, actually. You killed in North Africa, beside where I was.
So, you joined, and how did they receive you, the actual men of your platoon?
Well, Geordies. Geordie arriving there, that, no problem. They just showed you the ropes and told you what was going off, and that was it at the company office.
And about what month would this be? Would it be still in April?
About April time,
so
yes.
So you hadn't been at Bransworth, hardly?
Oh, no, it was only 3 weeks or something.
So it might have been May, but no later?
Yeah, no later.
And where were they billeted at Winchelsea? What were you billeted?
In private houses opposite the church. A big white house, and there was, if I recall, D Company were at one end of the village, and C Company were in the centre. And then my room was at the far end, nearest C Company.
What were the billets like?
Well, it was a big commandeered house. And
so
we just slept on the floor. We all slept sleeping on the floor on palliasses.
And what about the food? Had that improved from your training?
Food was very, very good. Well, yes.
It was better than...
It was a lot better, yes. Food was quite good, and you got a good variety of food there.
Cooked by the battalion cooks, or the
cooked by the company cooks, yes.
So, what were the duties that your company and platoon were doing while you were at Winchelsea?
Guards on the harbour at Winchelsea. We used to do guards.
So, what would a harbour guard be like?
Well, there were chalets at the bottom of the hill at Winchelsea, and there was all holiday chalets, and we used to be in a pillbox at the entrance to the chalet entrance, and there was two guards on at a time. One used to stand in the pillbox, and the other one walked round the chalets and looking out to sea, obviously, because it was all mined on the sides. And
the beach was mined?
The beach was mined, yes. And during the day, it was a 48 hour guard, I think.
Yes. Just two of you.
Two of you. Ah, but wait a minute. You did two on, four off for 48 hours. That's what it was. And you came back to the little old cottage and got your head down for 4 hours and had a drink and something to eat. And after 4 hours, you're back on again.
What was in the pillbox? Was it a machine gun post or anything?
We had sandbags and we had a Brent gun. And that was that. And one rifle. One of the chaps had the rifle and the other one had the Brent gun.
Was there a shortage of rifles or something? Or?
No, I don't think so. Not there. No, every man had their own rifle.
But not on that duty?
On that duty, I think there was... It could have been two rifles, I'm not sure. Can't remember. But I know we had a Bren gun there as well.
And did anything ever happen or any...
Yes, it did happen. One day when we were on the harbour guard, we spotted two dinghies coming in. And it turned out to be the lads, the Canadians, had come back from a raid they'd done on
Dieppe.
They'd done Dieppe, and some of them came in at Wychelsea. There was four in a dinghy.
What state were they in?
Well, I think they'd been out at sea for a few days. You know, we didn't see much of them, really, because as soon as we reported them that they were coming in, the telephones were ringing and the Canadians came down from Hastings, which was their base. And
they didn't actually get ashore with you?
No, they couldn't get ashore with us for mines.
Now, what about air raids? I know there were air raids on Rye, but did you get them on Winchelsea?
We had one day, we were on manoeuvres. When Montgomery first took over, he devised a thing of 10 miles in 2 hours. That's full FSMO. And we went from Winchelsea along the beaches at Camber. And Tunney I was telling you about,
your friend, yeah.
Tom Tunney, he was carrying the gun and I was carrying the barrel to keep the weight down in magazines.
This is a Bren?
A Bren gun, yes. And Jerry came over and machine gunned us, and there was a gap between about 20 yards between Tommy Tunney and I, and I had part of the gun, he had the other part. And they came round, the bombers, they were fighter bombers, and they bombed the cement works at Camber, on the other side of Camber Beach. That was one episode. Another time we shot there was an aircraft, they gave information that if an aircraft came in low, you had to open up fire on them because the British aircraft had instructions to come over the coast at a certain night. In this day, we were on duty. I was on duty with another champion. His name was Poole, actually, Jack Poole. And he said, aircraft coming in. And it was spinning over the sea. And we got the Bren gun and fired at it. And it was smoke coming from it. And I couldn't tell whether we hit it or not, but it came down the other side of Winchelsea. And dived into the ground. It was a Canadian pilot in a bullfighter. And for our trouble, had to guard it all night. But they fetched us off one guard and put us onto another one.
So it was already hit before
It was hit before we, that's right. Yeah.
Now, you mentioned the Bren twice. Were you put on the Bren gun team?
I was a Bren gunner.
That's what you were put in as.
That's right. Yeah.
How many were there in a Bren gun team?
Two.
And that was you and Tunney?
Tunney, yeah. He was a Bren gunner and I was his mate, or I was a Bren Gunner and he was a mate, sort of thing. That's so the way they used to work it.
The Bren Gunner would fire it, and the other one would make sure they would
get the carry the magazines and what have you, you know, and strip it down, put the new barrels on, and yeah, you worked as a team.
Why had they picked you as Bren Gunner?
I don't know. I only wish I knew.
So you were put in it as soon as you arrived?
That's correct, yeah.
So they didn't check your fire?
No.
And so, as a Bren Gunner, were you in a section, or, I mean, was there a Bren Gun section, or...?
No, not with our battalion, not with our company, no.
So you were just in a normal platoon?
Well, just a normal platoon, and there was two of us on the Bren Guns. Of course, I mean, all right, if you dropped off, somebody else took over, because everybody knew about the Bren Gun. It wasn't just a specialist.
But you started it.
I was on it at Winchelsea, yes, and in North Africa.
Were there any stoppages that you were trained to, I mean...
Oh, yes, you've got overheated barrels and things like that, you know.
Was that common with the Bren?
I mean, oh, yes, they used to get hot. Yes, and the twist, they could twist, you know. So you had a spare barrel and you just used to clip it up, pull it off, put another barrel on. And let the other one cool if you could.
And how long would that take? As long as you've just done, or...?
Well, it all depends how many rounds you've fired. I throw it, you know, to get it hot.
No, but I mean, how long to change a barrel?
Oh, a few seconds.
Just like you did?
That's right. It was only a matter of pulling it down, pushing it off, putting the other one on, make sure they had plenty of ammunition in the magazines.
Were there any other common jamming or things that caused it?
Only on the magazines. If you know, sometimes you've got a stoppage on the magazine.
What would cause that?
Well, they were on a spring, and it was just probably the spring had stuck or something like that.
How would you clear that?
Well, shove another magazine on.
It was as easy as that.
The Bren gun was a very, very simple gun, and
was
very accurate too.
Was there much problem with ammunition of the wrong size? You know,
No problems there. Then we had a few Tommy guns.
You said the Bren was very accurate. Some people have said that was almost a problem because it didn't have enough of a spread for a machine gun. Do you know what I mean?
Well,
it just fired every bullet after the other one.
That's correct, it did. It didn't spread. It didn't spread out, no.
Did you see that as a problem? Or?
No, not really. Because if you're pinpointing something, some of them had telescopic sights on the rifles. And if you had problem, somebody sniping and you couldn't pinpoint it, they used to put telescopic sight lad on. I think Tony was on telescopic sights as well.
What, for the Bren?
No, on a rifle.
So, would the Bren any good at sweeping?
Not really, no. It didn't come out like a Vickers gun or anything like that.
So it was more good.
It was a case of if you're using it from the hip. It was a case you spread yourself, sort of thing.
Rather than use it off the tripod.
That's right. Yeah.
So it wasn't that good for that sort of thing.
Oh no.
Would it have a long enough range to be used for indirect fire? You know, or was it mainly used just direct on?
It was pretty accurate up to about 800 yards.
So it was a weapon for you. You could see what you were firing.
You could see what you were firing at. It was pretty accurate.
Did you ever get the chance to compare it with, say, its predecessor? I think probably the Lewis was a.
No. I never saw a Lewis.
Did you see any of the other light machine guns?
No. A Tommy gun. The RNCOs, a lot of them had Tommy guns.
Did you ever get a chance to use them? Or
no, I didn't like a Tommy gun, actually.
Why not?
Sometimes they used to go off on their own. Funny enough, I don't know why. I used to hear the friend of mine, Lance Corporal, that was with me. He used to say, "That's Tommy gun, it's off, starting off itself again." And they used to. You had to be very careful with the Tommy gun.
You mean the safety catch wasn't reliable?
That's right, it wasn't reliable. That's right.
Did you ever, the Sten would be, did you see much of the Sten?
Sten gun, a few.
What did you think of that?
Well, I'd never had one. Same again.
You didn't really know the weapon.
Not standing one much.
What about the vicars? I mean, would you ever come into contact?
We didn't have a vicars, no. I think they used to have the vicars on the on aircraft, didn't they? A vicars machine going. And also on tanks or Brent carriers.
But they weren't using them in a DLI at the time?
No, we didn't. I mean, we hadn't got any Brent carriers. Well, headquarters had Brent carriers, but we were just infantrymen, and that was it. End of story.
So, we talked about air raids and the harbour guards. What else were you doing? Did they start the exercise? We're still doing exercises.
Still doing exercises. What sort of marching, route marches, field craft.
What about
fire pickets? The same as
you discussed before. What about big exercises involving other battalions?
Other battalions, occasionally, not too often.
What were they
like? Well, they used to give us rations and take us away somewhere, the other side, up top side of Kent somewhere in Sussex. That was it. And we're left on your own with we NCOs, and you're marching through orchards and you name it, and you had to get to rendezvous so-and-so. That was it.
What did you think of them?
Well, they were all part of soldiers' life, I think. You know.
How realistic were they?
Oh, they're very realistic. Only that you fired blanks.
Did you have umpires?
Yes. They used to say, you're dead, sort of thing, and that was it, and you're out. They used to capture you, sort of thing, you know. I think in one period, if I recall, I think we had one of these schemes, they used to call them schemes, and we had the Canadians. I think it was about a two-day one with the Canadians. But other regiments that were in the area, sometimes we used to come across them, you know, on these schemes.
Now, was there anything else you did in a military nature during your time in Winchelsea before you...
No, I don't think so, apart from the marches across the sands and things like that at Canberra. There's 10 miles in 2 hours.
Which was that tough, 10 miles in 2 hours?
It was. Because you had FSMO on, full service marching order.
Did everyone do it, officers as well?
I don't know. I think so. But they didn't have as much kit as we did. I mean, they had a revolver, we had rifles and Bren guns.
When you were on the Bren, that's a point. Did you have a rifle as well as a Bren?
Yes. The gunner only had the Bren gun, right? But his mate, as you might say, I had a rifle.
Right. Now, how did you get on with the locals at Winchelsea? Because you were a North Country battalion on the south coast.
We used to go in a pub occasionally at Winchelsea. The people were all right there. They used to play push halfpenny with you, sort of thing. Taught us how to play push halfpenny. Some of them were quite good, some of them. Don't forget that Winchelsea was a lordy posh area. There were very big houses. And they didn't seem to want to know you. They would nod to you, but they wouldn't converse with you. In the pub, they used to be all right, because there was farm workers there and all, you know, people that lived in there. Some of them were quite good. There was two old ladies in the main street at Winchelsea, the opposite C Company office, and they used to make tea and home-baked cakes. And every morning at tea break, we used to go there, or to the Naffy, but these two old ladies, well, must be dead long ago, they used to make us... cakes, and it was quite cheap actually for a nice cup of tea and home baked scones that they used to make. I should imagine, old ladies in their 80s then. Very nice.
So, was there any actual hostility from the locals?
No, none. Not that I knew of, any. Only once, actually, we're doing drill, parade, and the regimental sergeant major, he were cussing, and an old lady walked up to him, and he was standing on the pavement and swearing at the lads, and she taps him on the shoulder. She says, "We don't have swearing in our village." And he's speechless.
Who was he? Do you remember his name? The RSM?
I don't. Actually, it was Thomason. Well, he doesn't come to any of the reunions. He's not interested.
Now, how were you getting on with your various, with your own NCOs? What did you think of them?
Oh, they're all quite good. Well,
were there any particular characters amongst them?
Well, funny enough, they're all the NCOs we had there were all from Durham, from Shields, and all around. The Lance Corporal, he was killed, he was made a sergeant and got killed, Jack Christie, he was quite good. And there was Lance Sergeant and a Sergeant, whom we never see on the reunions. But they were, on the whole, they had a job to do, and they were quite good, really. Just to look after the lads, if there's any problems, you just had to tell them and they sorted out for you.
So they were good NCOs?
They were good lads, yes.
And they were competent in the military sense as well?
Oh yes.
They knew the
keen,
job?
Very keen, yeah.
Now what about your officers? You had your platoon officer was Duck. What was he like?
He came from Sunderland. He was, I don't know what his civilian job was, but he was quite a nice chap, really. He talked to you. Casually, he's like one of the lads out in North Africa, no problem.
Was he? Did he strike you before he got to North Africa? I mean, did you see much of him during the training and beach duty?
Occasionally.
Who was, in your view, running things as far as day-to-day admin was concerned in England?
Sergeant Major, more or less, in the sergeants.
The company sergeant major.
Yeah.
And the. So the officers were over and above that?
That's right. You saw them occasionally, but they never used to interfere with the training or anything like that, you know.
So you don't remember the name of your company commander, but do you remember what he was like? I mean, was he a good officer?
He seemed to be all right, yes. I'm trying to think of who it was. I think we had two. Yes, it was George Joby. It was George Joby.
And what was he
from
like?
Tyne Road. He was quite good, really. I mean, he wasn't one of the old school tie sort of thing. He was down to earth for an officer sort of thing, and he was quite good.
And what about the top level, the colonel? I think.
Well, we never used to see the colonel very much.
It would be Ware most of that year.
That's right, Colonel Ware. He was our colonel.
And what did you think of him? I mean, I realise you didn't have much to do with.
Unless you did something bad, and you had to go before the CO, the colonel, for a court martial or anything. We never used to see him. He never used to come to Winchelsea or anything like that. I think if he had any messages for Winchelsea, it was either dispatched right or on the telephone.
Did they have an influence, the colonels? I mean, often regimental histories talk about a colonel sort of enthusing a regiment or doing this to a battalion, rather. I mean, did he make much difference to you when the colonels changed?
No, not really, no. Not to us, no. It probably did to the lieutenants and things like that, but not to the men. Unless you were at HQ company and you saw him every day, sort of thing, or his driver. But Colonel Ware we never saw, very rare.
Now, going from that, did you have any particular friends, you know, within the unit?
Ah, yes. One lad is still alive, he lives at South Shields.
What was he called?
Oh.
It's all right, let's come back. What were you looking for in your mates?
Well, comradeship, obviously. I mean, somebody you could rely on if you got into problem, if you had problems. Somebody you could really turn to, you know.
And he was from South Shields as well?
Arthur Laws, that was his name. He was from South Shields.
And you got on well with Tony as well, did you?
Tony,
you made
yeah, and Jack Christie, Lance Corporal, he was our section.
Was there ever any question of you going for promotion at that? I mean, you hadn't been with them 5 minutes.
That's right, no. No.
Would you have liked to I mean, were you interested in sort of making a career out
no,
of
it? No, thank you, no.
You were happy at...
I was happy as I was.
Why was that? I mean, could you just explain that? I understand it, but could you explain it, if you see what I mean?
Well, if you look through this book here, of the 16th Battalion Durham Light Infantry, you'll see that most of the NCOs were killed. It was a precarious job. But all right.
And you realised that even before you went into action, I mean?
That's right, yes. They were responsible for leading the men and making sure that they didn't get killed or whatever.
And you saw that as a danger even before you'd left England?
Yes.
Now, you were mobilised. You began to hear in October, apparently, that 46 Div, that was your division, were going to go to North Africa.
No.
The First Army did. Carry on, sorry.
Far East One.
That's where you heard you were going. Now, you just showed me your soldier's paybook, basically, and it says Far East One. That's where they wrote in your book that you
that's
were going.
That's correct.
So, although your history says that you were told in October you were going to North Africa sort of thing, you thought you were going to Burma or somewhere.
We didn't know when we got on the boat. Nobody knew.
You never knew right?
We never knew till we got to our destination.
Well, did that cause a lot of rumours?
Oh, obviously, on the boat. I mean, the whole of the 46th Division on the boat.
But before you got on the boat?
Oh, no. We thought we were going to Far East War now.
How did you feel about that, being the Japanese War?
Well, just put it down as a posting and that was it.
You didn't have any preference in your own mind?
Oh, no.
Because it makes no difference.
No, that's right. No.
So, now you weren't actually with the battalion when they were posted because you were on leave or something. Could you explain what happened?
I came on leave, on privilege leave. That was ordinary privilege leave.
Yeah, which you got. It was your turn.
It was my turn to go on leave, yes. And when we got to the station and they told us to report back to Winchelsea, but to report to near Aldershot. At Camberley. They told us to report to Camberley. And of course, when we got to Camberley, there was three of us. There was full corporal, lads corporal and myself. When we got to Camberley, there was only two or three people in the barracks, in the house where they commandeered. And when we asked where everyone was, they said they were on embarkation leave. Of course, this corporal from Sunderland, he said, "Aye," he says, "we want our embarkation leave." So they give us 48 hours on top. We just come back, they give us another 48 hours.
The corporal was with you.
That's right. Then we just went round London. We didn't go back to Durham, back home. We just went round London area for a couple of days and then went back. And when we got back, everything was mobilised.
Were there any sort of last-minute preparations for going overseas that you noticed? Or?
Yes, all the kits were checked. Everybody had their kit checked. And
were you have any special kit issued or special uniform, KD? Or
no, we didn't.
It was just battle dress?
Just ordinary battle dress and denims and what have you. And we knew we were going away and posted somewhere, but we didn't know where. were inspected at Camberley by the King. We stood in some park near Camberley for about 3.5 hours in the cold, the whole of the 46th Division. And then after the King had been walked up, down and inspected the troops, he got in a car to drive off, and the sergeant, the regimental sergeant major, shouted, if you want to run to the roadway and cheer, you can do. And with that cold, there's hardly anybody moved. It was perishing cold. Of course, it was December. It was December time. So that was it. That was the reception he got.
Was he popular, the King? I mean,
well, I suppose to the royalists sort of thing, you know. Right. It was nice to be told that the King was coming to inspect you before you went to wherever you're going, Burma or whatever.
But you weren't that bothered, you said?
No.